my name's Nicole, and I'm an alcoholic. I had 1 year clean February 22nd of this year, so it's kind of exciting. And when I knew my 1 year was coming, like, around, and I live out of town. I live in St. Louis, so I had to make plans to come up. And when I knew, I kind of harassed Chris and was like, hey, can I talk? Can I talk? Can I talk? I didn't get a quick response, but eventually he gave in and said, yes, you can talk. So here I am. To me, it's important to talk new in recovery because I remember sitting in all these chairs, and I remember thinking, 5 years? Fuck, I can't even get 5 days, you know? And, like, I wanted that person who had just a few days, you know, a few months, a year, whatever. I didn't want to, I don't know. I don't even know if I'll be alive in 30 years. I can't even imagine being sober that long. So for me, that was, like, a big thing, and it's part of giving back, which is part of the program, which is huge to me as well. I was born August 12th, 1974 in Springfield. Yeah. In Springfield, Illinois, I grew up in a relatively what society calls a normal family. Mom, dad, sister, family, pet. You know, nothing terrible happened to me during my childhood that drove me to be an alcoholic. Not a lot of trauma, actually no trauma. So, but my grandfather and my uncle were both alcoholics. And everyone had always warned me, but I didn't pay attention to it. First time I got drunk, I was 15 years old. I was at a New Year's Eve party, and the parents supplied the alcohol. I will never forget that drunk as long as I live. It was awesome. It was like, I can talk to anybody. I can be anybody. I can do anything I want to do. Yeah. Well, that eventually gets you in trouble. But at 15, you think you're pretty Billy Badass, and you're ready to take on the world. So I dealt with that at 15. By the time I was 16 and all the way through high school, we were getting drunk every day at school, or probably 4 days a week. I shouldn't say every day, but yeah, about 4 days a week. Teachers knew, they didn't care. They'd get drunk, well, not get drunk with us, but they would drink our drinks, and nobody cared. It was like, you guys are good kids, you're not causing any trouble, just get drunk. So that's what we did. After high school, I went to college, and I went away for college, and that's where the drinking really began, like, extremely excessively. I don't remember a lot of college. I remember I got my heart broke for the very first time, and I thought I was going to marry this guy, and I was so excited. I came home from Christmas break, like, all ready. I came back to school from Christmas break, all ready to be in love. Well, over Christmas break, he failed to mention to me that he got married to the girl who wasn't his girlfriend. So that then caused me to drink a lot, and I became also not only the college drunk, but also the college whore. So, like, I slept with his brother, his cousins. I slept with everybody because, hey, what better way to hurt him than to hurt myself, right? I mean, isn't that how it goes? So I did that for about 3 years. It was cute. No, it wasn't. I did that for about 3 years, and then my parents said, we're not paying for you to party. I mean, like, that's not going to happen. So they sent me home. Well, I had a choice. I could either pay myself or go home. And because I'm an alcoholic, I don't want to do, you know, the smart thing. So I choose to come home, make my own money, and do my own thing. So I do that. And then I remember, like, being at home, working nonstop, and hanging out, again, with the wrong people, being drunk all the time. And one night I met a gentleman. We started a relationship. Everything was good, or so I thought. And then there was an issue. He got in a car accident, was on pain medicine. And I remember kind of saying some things to him that I probably shouldn't have said. Anyway, I ended up getting raped that night. And I remember I blamed myself for it, never once thinking that it was the alcohol. Yeah, I mean, like, I made a poor choice because I was under the influence, and I had said things I shouldn't have, but he should have never taken advantage of. Like, it just shouldn't have happened like that. So that really traumatized me a lot. After that, my parents had moved to Missouri, so I went back to Missouri with them, or I went to Missouri with them, and it was, like, same thing. I mean, I was just drunk all the time. That's, like, all that I did, and that's when I really began to hide it. Before I came to any type of recovery center, I didn't really know that hiding alcohol is maybe a sign that you're an alcoholic. But yeah, so I had a slight problem with hiding. Yeah. But, and so I remember, just being, like, drunk again. That's all I ever did. It was boring. I mean, what a boring existence. I met my husband in Missouri. I was actually standing on a street corner. Sounds good, I know. We were at a bar, and a friend, actually my roommate, was getting in a physical altercation with her boyfriend. And I knew the cops were going to be called, and you guessed it, I was drunk. And I didn't want to go to jail, so I'm like, I'm just going to walk home. It's like less than a mile. And he pulled up and offered me a ride. I mean, that's probably not the most educated decision to get in a car, but again, same story, I was drunk. So I got inside the car, I told him that very first night I loved him and I was going to marry him, and he's like, okay, you're crazy. And 18 years later, here we are. So, and I mean, you know, he stuck through me with all of this. My husband was a drinker when I met him. I mean, he still drinks, but not like, yeah, he's not, yeah. Anyway, he was a drinker. We're also Catholic. So if you all don't know what that means, like, I was like super pumped. I was like, dude, yeah, the picnic is sponsored by Budweiser. This is kick ass. Like, I can drink at my kids' sporting events. This is so cool. Like, it was cool. And, his family was like perfectly, well, I mean, they drank. Like, my family didn't because of my grandpa and my uncle. And so he, you know, his family drank. And so I didn't think anything wrong about it. And, like, I was just, again, drunk all the time. I got pregnant before we got married. I didn't drink through my pregnancy. Then we got married. I don't remember my wedding day because, hey, I was drunk. I remember my mom left my reception early. I remember getting in a fight with my dad over my mom leaving my reception early and cussing out my uncle because he's the reason, because he was drunk, that my mom left the reception early, all in front of everyone. And we actually, this is embarrassing, but it's the truth. We actually have pictures, like at my wedding, we had an open bar. So we actually have pictures of like people like seeing me at the end of the night, like drinking half drunk drinks, like off tables, because I was like, I'm not drunk enough. Like, it's cool, whatever. So we stayed at the hotel that I wanted to stay at for a wedding night. It like overlooked the arch. You know, I was like, this is really cool. We got lost getting there. So we went in a loop three times. The third loop, I puked out the window, puked all in my hair, on my bridal dress, like everything. And like, you got all these bobby pins going on and there's puke everywhere. Yeah, it was sexy, let me tell you. And we walk in and like the lady's like, oh, you're here for the honeymoon package. And they give us non-alcoholic champagne. I'm like, I can see where this is going. You guys can tell, but I had no idea. So yeah, so we got married, did our thing, had two more kids. Everything really took a bad turn. I mean, not as if that wasn't bad enough, but like where I was drinking daily. My mom passed away from cancer in 2004. And I can remember being in her hospital room as she's dying. And there was an episode of Oprah on. And they had moms on there that were drunks. Just, you know, and they're like, oh, I put alcohol in my cup before I take my kids to the park. And I'm like, man, what losers those moms are. Like, who does shit like that, right? Yeah, well, 6 months later, here I am pushing the baby buggy. Oh, let me have a drink of my water. Yeah, it didn't fool anyone. But So after my mom died, I had a lot of anger about her dying, and it was an excuse. I'm an excuse drunk. Like, I could drink because it rained today. I mean, I could drink because you looked at me sideways. It didn't matter. It was always someone else's fault why I drank. It was never my own. There was no accountability. None. And so when my mom died, then the drinking really became pretty significant. And as far as like the hiding goes, like I emptied out like a chest of drawers, and that's where I would hide all my, I mean, that's how full, like my drawers would be full of alcohol, and like I would empty them out occasionally, but I mean, it was bad. It was really bad. My dad passed away in 2013 from cancer as well. And that was just like the end of it. I mean, that's when I began drinking daily. And when I say drinking daily, I would get up about 1 a.m. I would drink until 4. I'd drink till 5, sleep from 5 to 6, take my kids to school because, you know, that 1 hour nap is enough to make it where you're sober, you're cool. Take my kids to school, come home, start drinking again by 7:30, and would drink until 1 because I had to get that nap between 1 and 2 before I picked them up because, again, sobered me right up. Some days I would take alcohol to pick them up. Some days I wouldn't. And as I sit up here and talk about this, this is nothing that I'm proud of. And it took a really long time to like even be able to admit that I did these things because it's not cool. Like, it's just not. But back then I didn't care because I was hurting so bad. I couldn't deal with who I was as a person. And that's one of the beautiful things that Austin Recovery has given me, but I'll go on with that in a minute. But, so the drinking became pretty excessive. 2017, fast forward to that, Donald Trump became our president. And this is where it gets interesting. So I thank Donald Trump for my sobriety because I wasn't really happy that he was elected president. Not that we're talking politics, I'm just saying. So I remember watching like the Obamas leave the White House and I'm like crying on the couch. I'm hammered. I mean like hammered. I'm crying on the couch. I'm posting all over Facebook that our president's a rapist and I've been raped. My sister didn't know I'd been raped. I mean, that's a great way to find out, drunk posting on Facebook. And I'm like, oh, my God. I mean, like, it was horrible. So I finally, like, I don't know why I smartened up, but I was like, I probably need to call somebody to pick up my kids, like, since I can't even walk up the stairs to go get my shoes on to go and pick up my kids. So my kids get home, and I remember, like, trying to crawl up the steps. And I'm like to my kids, somebody help me. I can't get up the step. I mean, it was horrible. But my kids are older, so don't get me. I mean, it's not like they're, like, five. I mean, they're older. But so I remember that. And I remember the next day, like, all the embarrassment with all the Facebook posts, because there was a lot. And, like, my sister calling me, when were you raped? What in the world went wrong? What's wrong with you? You know, are you drunk? What's wrong? I was like, no, I'm not drunk. Everything's fine. So that was a Saturday. And then that Sunday, I had decided that I was going to go to the hospital because I couldn't keep food down. Now, prior to that, like a year before, I just started losing weight. And we didn't know why. And my doctors couldn't figure it out. They had no clue. I mean, we did every test known to man. Like, I even ate nuclear medicine. Like, they were like, try this out. See if we can figure something out. Well, we couldn't. And a big part of that is because I wasn't honest. Like, I didn't tell people I was drinking. Like, I'm not going to let you know that I'm a booze hag. Like, that looks horrible. So I went to the hospital. And I remember I went pee in a cup, and I was like, oh, they're not going to be able to pick anything up because it's been like 8 hours. You know, I mean, like, they're not going to know. I remember the doctor, he was young, and he came back in, and he said to me, he said, so do you have a problem with alcohol? Are you an alcoholic? And I was like, oh, no. Maybe back in the day, but not now. Like, I'm grown. I have children. I'm not an alcoholic. And he was like, well, your numbers are really bad. Like, so then they do blood work. And at this point, I was going to go to the Mayo Clinic because we just couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And it certainly wasn't that I was a drunk and would often lose track of days. Like, it would be like a Tuesday. And I wouldn't ask anybody what day it was again until Thursday. And then I'm like, well, shit, I didn't eat for 48 hours. Well, no wonder you lose like 100 pounds if you're not eating. And then, like, when you do eat, like, you can't keep it down, you know. So I've gladly put that weight all back on, and I'm not ashamed of it. Anyway, and I remember I was sitting in there, and this, like, this doctor of a different nationality came in, and he was like, I think you have a problem with alcohol. And I was like, I don't have a problem with alcohol. I'm like, I'm going to the Mayo Clinic. And he was like, well, good fucking luck at the Mayo Clinic, and, like, walks out. And I'm like, whoa. And, of course, then I was like, he's so rude to me. I want to file a complaint, you know. And I was the drunk. Anyway, and then I remember, like, they kept me in the hospital. I think they were trying to sober me up is what they were really trying to do because it was bad. So they kept me in the hospital a couple days, and then when they let me out, they said, here's some medicine you need to be on, and if you ever drink when you're on this medicine, you'll die. And I'm like, whatever, you know, but I'm like, I'll try it out. Why not? So I think I went like 4 or 5 days, and then somebody at work pissed me off, and I was like, oh, time to get hammered, you know. And I remember coming home and throwing away the medicine and like saying, fuck it. I don't really care if I live or if I die. And that was a really, really dark time because, like I said, I have 3 daughters, and they're amazing little girls. Well, they're not little anymore. My oldest is 17, but they're amazing girls. And like, I don't know, like, now that I'm sober, like, the activities that I get to do with them, like, is so cool. Because, like, my daughter, like, my oldest daughter, when we decided I was going to go to rehab, my oldest daughter said to my dad, she goes to private school, and she said, Dad, I don't care if I have to go to public school. I just want Mom to get help. Like, you know, and, like, that was, like, holy fuck. Like, my kids see it, and, like, I don't even see it, you know. And that's, like, I don't know. It's just, like, absolutely, absolutely mind-blowing. So I decided to go to rehab. I told my husband, and I, like, researched it all day, and then I was like, yeah, I'm going to go to this place in Michigan. It looks pretty cool. It's kind of like, you know, like one of those promises, or, you know, and I was like, I get to keep my laptop, my cell phone. This is going to be awesome. I'm like, I'm excited. Mind you, it's in February, so it's really cold in Michigan, but that didn't matter. So I was like, this is going to be great. So I fly out there. I get there, and everything had kind of been a little fishy to begin with, but So I get inside the car finally after the guy was like 45 minutes late picking me up. I get inside the car and they told me it's like 30 minutes to the rehab facility. And he's like, oh no, it's like two and a half hours. And I'm like, what the fuck? So then I'm like, well, I'm really glad that I asked the questions about if this is Scientology based. Now, let me say this, nothing against Scientology. I just didn't want my medical treatment coming from a Scientologist organization. So he's like, oh yeah, our owner is a, and I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, oh my gosh. So I'm like, you need to turn the car around. Well, the lady won't let him turn the car around over at the treatment center. She's like, you can't turn her around. You need to bring her all the way out here. And I'm like, I'm not going all the way out there. I mean, it's like 2 hours. You can't even Uber in for that. I'm like, heck no. So I kept telling him, I was like, turn around. Turn around, and they wouldn't turn around. So finally, I was like, look, I know what highway we're on, and I'm fixing to dial 911, and your ass is fixing to go to jail for kidnapping because you need to take me back to the airport. So he turned around. Well, she finally said, take her back. So, because, you know, they don't want that investigated. So they turn around, take me back to the airport where I'm like, I have to call my husband, and I have to say, I'm coming home. And I told him, and he was like, this is fucking ridiculous. He was like, you're never going to go. You're not going to get treatment. You know, you have disrupted this family enough, so on and so forth. Well, all along, I'm sitting here thinking, oh, I made the choice to go. Like, you know, nobody else even notices that there's a problem. Like, I chose to do this. And so I remember, like, I had, thank God, enough cash in one of my little secret accounts, probably my alcohol account, but secret account. And I remember I bought my plane ticket, and I remember him being like, I don't know if I'm going to be at the airport to pick you up. And so, of course, I start crying, and I'm like, well, then you can fuck off, you know, and all this other stuff. And it was ridiculous. And so he did come and pick me up, but he said, I don't want to talk to you. Like, don't even speak to me. And so, of course, I'm like, baby, I love you. I love you. You know, like trying to, like, suck up. And I'm like, maybe we can find something closer. Well, that wouldn't have worked. But so anyway, then within the next few days after coming home from there, I have a friend in high school who went to rehab here. And obviously my high school was full of drunks and drug addicts. I mean, obviously. But she went to rehab here. And so she was like, I really think you're going to like it there. Like, just try it out, you know. So I was like, okay. So I like look it up. And because I'd been in the hospital and so much testing, like all my copays and everything were covered. So, and it's in network. So I was like, it's basically free. Why not? We'll give it a go. And I like Austin. So I was like, that's pretty cool. I mean, I like your airport. That's what I knew of it. But so, I mean, I do. It's good. So anyway, so I went and I came, and I remember thinking, I don't know about this. Like, I'm not 100% sure. So I go to be checked in, and I remember I was like, I'm not ready to give up my cell phone quite yet. Like, I'm not ready for this. And they're like, you don't really have a choice. Like, we take your cell phone. This is how it goes. And I'm like, but at that other place, I got to keep my cell phone. Yeah, that's not how it works here. And I remember I was thinking, I can't talk to my kids. Like, how am I? And I should say, when I came to rehab here, I was a bit of a phone caller. So like I probably call my husband 50 to 75 times a day, but that's just to make sure no one was coming home before I could hide the liquor. See, like, you know, I mean, like there's a system to it all. So I was like, how am I not going to call him and like, just say, hi, what are you doing? You know? And he's always like, I'm busy. I can't talk. I work, you know? So anyway, I was like, I'm not sure about this. So then I remember I like got through the check-in process, and I remember saying to the nurse, there's two things that I'm afraid of. I don't want to be raped, and I don't want to be beat up. Like, I'm like, if those two things happen, like, I'm so out of here. And she's like, people don't get raped here. And she's like, and if there's a fight, like, we kick the people out. She's like, I've never really seen a good fight. And I'm like, hey, okay. I'm like, all right, I can handle it, you know. And, like, everybody around me, I mean, I'm 43 years old. At the time, I was 42. Everybody around me is, like, 21, you know. And I'm like, shit, I'm never going to fit in here. So I, like, get my room. And the first room they put me in, again, because I was so malnourished, I couldn't climb up in the bed. So I was like, can't have this bunk bed. Sorry, you know. Maybe this isn't meant to be. I'm just saying. Time to send me home. So they were like, oh, no, we'll find you a different room. So they find me a room, and I had two great roommates, like amazing roommates, and they really, really helped me. But I remember, like, the first, I don't know if it was 7 or 10 days, I didn't unpack. And they were always like, you have a couple drawers over there that you can use. I mean, like, it's okay if you unpack. Oh, I'm not going to be here 30 days. We'll be okay. I got 15 and then I'm out of here. Like, I promise you guys. And they're all like, okay, whatever. So I remember when I unpacked, it was like a ceremony. It was like, woo, she's unpacking. She thinks she's going to stay. So yeah, I mean, it was that was definitely interesting. And just adjusting to life here was interesting because again, you don't get your phone, you know, and like, that was like my lifeline. Like, and now I'm like, shit, why can't I lose my phone for another 30 days? I mean, that'd be awesome. But I just remember like so many things that I learned here and how much this program gave me. You know, I remember like sitting here where you all are and thinking, this is so dumb shit. What am I gathering from any of this stuff? And it's amazing how when you get out in the real world and you use it, you're kind of like, hey, I'm kind of cool. Like, I know what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Like, you feel smart. Maybe other people feel smart for other reasons, but I felt smart because of that. And I mean, there's just so many things that I learned from here. And like, one of the biggest things that I learned from here, and I didn't take advantage, well, I didn't do it until a little bit later on, and I strongly suggest doing this, is I didn't get a sponsor until later on. And a sponsor is, like, so important to have. I mean, not just to help you work the steps, but just, like, to help you, like, in daily life. Like, I can call my sponsor, and I can say, yeah, I get to talk for 40 minutes, and I don't know what the fuck I'm going to talk about. And she's like, well, just talk from the heart. You'll be fine. And I'm like, all right, that sounds like a plan. But I mean, she's there to be like my rock, kind of, you know? And like, I had this one lady who I thought was going to be my sponsor. That was a disaster. And don't be afraid of that. Like, that happens. Like, seriously, like, sometimes you think, oh my gosh, she's going to rock as a sponsor. This is going to be awesome. Well, that first lady was a trip. And the second lady, like, I met her at a meeting and she was like, oh, I sponsor. So like, I send her a text and I'm like, hi, will you be my sponsor? And she's like, will you come over for coffee? And I'm like, I'm going over to your house. Like, I don't know about this. Like, what if I get killed or beat up or raped? You know, my two biggest fears. So I get over there and she was just, I mean, she was like so nice. And she was like, the only reason why I'm taking you is because you came to my house and you weren't, you know, and I can tell that you want to do it. And she really has been like a huge part of my recovery. I mean, a huge part. Another thing that you learn here that I think is so important is the importance of meetings. Like, I cannot stress that enough. So many of my littermates have relapsed. and a lot of it is because they don't go to meetings. You know, they just say, I don't want to go. Like, it has nothing to offer me or whatever. If nothing else, you get free coffee out of the thing and you get to hear other people's shit. I mean, that's like the best part about it. My husband is always like, Friday night, meeting, babe, let's go. This is great. And I'm like, it is fantastic. So, I mean, but you do, and you learn to depend on those other people and to listen to what they have to say and to grow from it. If you know, that's always the hope, is that you grow from it. The other thing is, like, I am very, very grateful that I have not had relapse be part of my recovery. And I remember when I was here, and it was always like, oh, relapse, you know. And I was like, I don't have an option to relapse. Like, if I relapse, my husband leaves me. Like, this is a one-shot deal. Like, I'm, you know, I can't keep coming back. I mean, like, this is it, you know. And if I would have relapsed here, if I would have relapsed from here, I would have had to go somewhere back home, and I didn't want to go to any of those places. So I was like, you know, like, this is like my one shot at it. And I think thinking that way and really getting rid of people, places, and things has been a huge help in my sobriety. I really did. I just really got rid of everyone. I mean, I have one friend that used to be my friend before all of this. A lot of people, when I came here, were like, you're not that bad. And I'm like, it's because I'm the drunk who makes you look good. Like, I'm the one who drinks you under the table. So that's why you're saying I don't look that bad, you know? And they were like, are you sure you're an alcoholic? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Like, my liver numbers, I'm dying. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure. So, and then, like, spiritual awakenings. I mean, they're real. They really are so real. When I was in the hospital last January, before I came here, like, my liver numbers, I don't have the exact numbers, and I meant to look them up before I came, but they were off the charts. I mean, like, off, like, I was getting yellow. Like, that's how bad it was. And I remember I was like, oh, no, there's nothing wrong. And then I ended up going back for something else completely different 6 months after I'd been sober. And I went back, and my numbers are all normal across the board. And I'm like, Like, that shit doesn't happen. And, like, the nurse was like, how did this happen? Like, they must have had a wrong number. I'm like, no, it's God. It's my higher power. Like, seriously. You know? And they were like, oh, that's pretty amazing. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And that's the other thing, too, like, the whole God thing. For a lot of people, they don't want to do the AA because they're worried, you know, they say they're not religious or whatever. You don't have to, I mean, it doesn't have to be God. It has to be a God of your understanding. So, like, when I first, I couldn't call my higher power God when I first started, so I called him Yum. And because I like to eat. And so I called him Yum. And like when things would go wrong, it was like Yum to the rescue, you know. And but then slowly I began to see that I could have a high, you know, that my higher power could be God. But I really had an issue with, like, I don't know. It was just weird for me. But yeah. So, and, you know, the higher power thing's usually a really big deal for people, as well as, like, you know, putting yourself in bad situations or, you know, worrying about other relationships before your own. They say all the time that your sobriety should be your number one goal, and it really should. I mean, like, I'm selfish as a son of a bitch because I take my sobriety that serious. Like, but because I'm selfish with something like that, I can be more giving with my kids and with my family and with my husband and everything else. So, and yeah, I have three kids, and so my... There, I asked them at my 1 year, I said, what's the one thing that you appreciate the most? And they said, we really appreciate the fact that, like, you don't yell, you don't scream at us anymore, you know? And that's, like, a really powerful thing when you think about it, because my kids never, they didn't have a mom who talked to them. Like, they had a mom who just yelled at them. And, like, I was, like, the lunatic mother. Like, I would, I don't know. I mean, I was just a, I was crazy. I mean, like, I would call AT&T, you know, for something because something wouldn't be right. And I'd be, I mean, by the end of it, I'm like, you motherfuckers. I mean, like, I'm like screaming and my kids are like, Mom, or like the nail lady at the mall. I mean, she didn't speak English. So like as a first language. So she was like, you know, oh, $20 or whatever. And then come to find out, she's like, oh, it'll be $45. And I'm like, I'm not paying $45, you know? And like, I'm screaming and my daughter's like, I'm never going to the nail place with you again. And I mean, I couldn't even go to Goodwill. Like, I'd, like, shove people at Goodwill. Like, it was just, I don't know. It was ugly. It was not a good way of life by any means. And sobriety has given me that back. And sobriety's also taught me a lot about my character defects, things I never thought about myself, really. I mean, like, I didn't realize how socially anxious I am as a person. And that's why I was always really probably drunk. I mean, there's lots of other reasons, too. But that's a big one. I mean, I could talk to anybody if I was drunk. Like, who cares? Let's party. You know, I mean, and that's something that I had in common with all those people. And, you know, I was the one who could drink the most. So it was like, hey, you know. And, yeah, and I mean, yeah. And I, the whole entire, like, just finding out those character defects, being able to work on them, doing amends, that's pretty hard. Like, I wasn't a big fan of that. And I'm still kind of working on that. Because I told my sponsor that I didn't think I needed to write any letters, you know, that I probably didn't really need to apologize. That's probably not what you want to tell your sponsor. So I'm now in the review stages of another step and humbling myself. So, but yeah, I mean, the program has given me so much here at AR. And I remember coming here and, like, I mean, it was not passages. And I remember being like, where's the pool? And I'm like, oh, there's a basketball court, but we can't play on it because the boys are outside. And then there's, you know, the salad bar was cool. But, and I mean, I still like the salad bar. Like, I was telling Jeannie, I was like, maybe I'll come back and volunteer a few months this summer and they'll give me room, board, and the salad bar. Like, that would be so cool. You don't even have to pay me. Just feed me in salad. But I really learned a lot about myself and other people here. Some of our littermates, you know, really felt like they weren't as rough off as others. And I think that's a horrible way to be about it. Like, you have to accept everybody for everybody. I mean, you know, I learned things I had no idea about. I didn't know about shooting heroin up your ass, but I learned. You know, I mean, like, and, like, seriously, like... But I mean, like, that's serious. Like, I'm just like a minivan driving mom. Like, that's what I do, you know? I'm just a drunk. I can't handle my, and I'm like, these people are like, oh yeah, and that one time when I shot heroin, I was like, what? Come again, you know? And I learned about Backpage and I learned about Moco Space. And I mean, it was just, I mean, I tell you, it was just crazy times, but I feel like so educated about it, you know? And, back home now, I work with at-risk and homeless youth, And so, like, they try to come in and, like, try to pull one over on me. Because, you know, like, I'm like the old lady, you know. And I'm like, who's on Backpage? What are you doing? You know, and they're like, how do you know about that kind of stuff? And I'm like, oh, I've been to rehab, bitches. I got this all, you know. And, yeah. I mean, but it was truly, truly a learning experience. And, you know, like I said, some of our, some of the people I was here with have relapsed. And it's sad. I mean, it's horrible when you see someone relapse. It's hard. We've lost one person who, was here when I was here. And, yeah, I mean, she just couldn't take it anymore. You know, like sometimes your demons are so deep, they just run really deep. And like, that just breaks your heart because, and I guess that's why I don't want to say I get frustrated, but you know, I'm like to people who don't get it or don't want to work the program or don't want to do any of it. Like, I'm like, if you just did it, it's so simple. It's 12 fucking steps. 12 steps. You take more than 12 fucking steps to find alcohol, to find drugs. I mean, it's 12 steps. 12 steps of your life that will change your life forever. I mean, it really does. I don't know what else to say other than, I mean, I'm so grateful for what Austin Recovery and that and AA has given back to me. I mean, I no longer want to kill people. I'm not worried that I'm going to go to jail for, I mean, like, seriously, for a DUI. I mean, like, seriously, I'm rolling all around town with my kids. But I'm like, fuck, I'm in a minivan. Nobody's going to pull over a fucking minivan. I'm going 5 miles under the speed limit. You swerving? Oh, my daughter dropped a French fry. Sorry, officer. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and the program has taught me it's okay to be me. And the other thing is, too, like, I was never secretive about going to rehab. I mean, shit, I post everything on Facebook. But I mean, like, you know, and it was interesting because so many people were like, oh, I'm so proud of you, rah, rah, rah. And like I said, and then you had the people who were like, you're not a drunk. Maybe you drink a little too much. No, I'm a drunk. And I'm proud of it. I wear it with pride. But, yeah, and I just, you know, I see people who are a little secretive about it, and that's okay. Like, everybody deals with it in their own way. But I find that if I tell people that I'm in recovery or that I'm a drunk, that it holds me accountable. And, you know, and then, like, nobody's going to, I don't know, I shouldn't say nobody, because some people do still invite you out to the bar and stuff, and that's cool. Like, I can just have a fizzy water, you know? And they're like, you sure you don't want anything to drink? No, what part are you not understanding of 365 days sober? Like, we're not going to mess that up just that way I fit in and look cool with you guys, because I'm 43 years old. I don't have to look cool for anybody anymore. So, I think that's one of the biggest things, too, is just knowing who you are and being true to you. It takes a long time to get there. It really, really does, but it's so worth it. It is so, so worth it. So, how much longer do I have? Am I good? Okay. Any questions? No, sorry. All right. Thank you guys so much.